Continue in Genesis this week in part of the 18th and part of the 21st chapters. The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre as he sat at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. He looked up and saw three men standing near him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent entrance to meet them and bowed down to the ground. He said, "My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. Let me bring a little bread that you may refresh yourselves, and after that you may pass on, since you have come to your servant." So they said, "Do as you've said." Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah and said, "Make ready quickly three measures of choice flour, knead it, and make cakes." Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared and set it before them. And he stood by them under the tree while they ate. They said to him, "Where's your wife, Sarah?" And he said, "There in the tent." And one said, "I will surely return to you in due season, and your wife Sarah shall have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent entrance behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. It had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I've grown old and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure?" The Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old?' Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? At the set time, I will return to you in due season, and Sarah will have a son." But Sarah denied, saying, "I did not laugh," for she was afraid. And he said, "Oh, yes, you did." And then in chapter 21, the Lord dealt with Sarah as he said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he promised. Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to his son, whom Sarah bore him. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. "Now," Sarah said, "God has brought laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me." And she said, "Who would ever have said to Abraham and Sarah they would nurse children? Did I have borne him a son in his old age?" In our hearing, our speaking, our living. Nelson Mejia has been farming in the small Honduran village of El Rosario most of his life. Now in his 50s, tall, strong, large man, he understands that unless something changes soon, his village could starve. Several news sources reported about Nelson and his village this summer, how the people there have faced drought for 5 years now, how rising air temperatures have driven away the rains, how climate change is likely responsible for the boosting of the spread of a type of beetle that has ravaged the pine forests around El Rosario that had already been depleted by logging. The loss of the forests has further diminished the freshwater streams, causing the temperatures in the village to climb even higher. There are multiple reasons for increases in migration from Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, including violence and extreme poverty. But lack of food is often the number one reason given for why people would leave behind the only home, the only life they've ever known. If you take a graph superimposing the rising number of migrants from those three nations and put over it another graph that charts the drought, it matches. With extreme violence and corruption in the cities, Nelson and his neighbors in El Rosario have very few options and are uncertain what the future will bring for them. There was once another migrant farmer who moved his family and his animals, fleeing a drought. But now Abraham was prosperous and advanced in age. Many years before, God had promised Abraham these promises about children and subsequent generations and more so that they counted like the stars. God had promised Abraham and Sarah would become a blessing to the world for generations to come, and that God would be with them always. Sarah and Abraham had faithfully waited and waited and waited. Years and decades passed, and still no child. First, Abraham, in a part that we did not read today, Abraham laughs first. Just to point that out. First, Abraham, and then Sarah laugh when God again says, "Of course, I'm going to keep my promise. You're going to have a child." You're skeptical. The God who brought forth the worlds into being had promised to continue to bring forth life, but with each passing year, their hopes had to have gotten dimmer. With our Jewish and Muslim siblings, we claim Abraham and Sarah as our kin, our lineage, our heritage. We inherit those promises. And like them, we may be skeptical. We may have serious doubts about our future as a species, the future of the earth itself. We may find our faith tested these days. Or we may stay in soft denial that I talked about last week. We may even cling to the hope that some gigantic arm is going to descend from the sky, the arm of God or technology, and just rescue the people of El Rosario so we don't have to change anything. A recent poll, a Yale poll, found that 70% of Americans agree climate change is happening and will cause harm to plants, animals, and future generations. Only 60% think it will affect the United States. And only 40% think it will affect them personally. Richard Hallwell, who was a Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs in the 80s, was talking about the situation in Honduras, and he said, "We can't just pull up a drawbridge, wall out the rest of the world, and say, we can survive here on this island that is the United States. We are interconnected, and our security is enhanced by ensuring that the world and their world is stable." More and more many are seeing the dots connect between our addiction to fossil fuels, the rising wealth of a very tiny percentage of the world's population, the increases in migration, a slew of very bad policies, and a whole host of disturbing signs that reveal more and more trouble coming at us more quickly. And more of us, myself included, need to connect those dots. It is going to affect all of us, regardless of our address or our bank account or our education level or anything else. But we know from history and our current lives that it will hit the poor and the marginalized the hardest. In North Carolina and Virginia, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline is supposed to run through some of our poorest counties. The impact on the marginalized, impoverished community at least initially, will be greater in those areas that have had the least to contribute to climate change. As Jim Antall, a UCC conference minister for the Massachusetts conference, wrote, because climate change amplifies all forms of injustice, hunger, refugees, racism, poverty, inequality, deadly viruses, war, defense of creation is a campaign for justice. There is a Buddhist premise that says nature is a construct. Nature is a construct. The sharp, clearly defined separation that we imagine exists between us and nature, between us and the people of Honduras and South Africa and Iceland and Outer Mongolia, simply isn't there. Just as the trees are connected at their roots by this fungal system, this amazing thing that scientists are more and more discovering, that where trees feed one another and help to heal one another, so we are all connected. Testimony of Abraham and Sarah is that God is in a covenant relationship with all created life. We are all related in this strong and fragile web. The testimony of all of Scripture is that we are to love our neighbor as ourselves. And our neighbor is the person down the street and those in our circles of family and friends. Our neighbors are also the poorest communities and the wealthiest. Our neighbors are those in communities plagued by higher cancer rates because of pollution in the rivers. Our neighbors are Nelson Mejia and El Rosario. Our neighbor is the honeybee on the shrubs outside of this building and the polar bear in the Arctic. Our neighbor is the generation not yet born. Now more than ever, it's critically important for us to rediscover those connections, to strengthen those relationships, to honor the interconnections, because we are at such a critical crossroads where we have a fundamental choice to make. Will we withdraw and isolate ourselves and look out for only our lives and those we love? Or will we understand how sacred the relationships God has given us truly are? Cameron Trimble, in a devotional that she shared this past week, on the anniversary of 9/11, talked about the new musical that's just opened on Broadway called Come From Away. You heard of this? It's the story of American Airlines Captain Beverly Bass and how on September 11th of 2001, she was flying a plane with 158 passengers from Paris to Dallas. Somewhere over the middle of the Atlantic, she got the air-to-air radio communication that a plane had hit the World Trade Towers. And she writes that in a matter of minutes, the New York airspace was closed, followed quickly by all U.S. airspace, forcing over 4,000 international flights in the air at that moment to find other places to land. Air traffic control told the captain to expect to land in Gander, Canada. Now, the airport at Gander, Canada was built for service during World War II, and after the war, saw very little major traffic ever. And in a span of 12 hours on that day, 38 international aircraft and almost 7,000 people landed in Gander, almost doubling the size of its population. And when it became clear that the plane people were going to be stranded for several days, community sprang into action, Cameron writes. They housed people in their own homes. They cooked every meal. They turned the local hockey rink into a freezer for food storage. They set up additional phone towers so the people could call home. They cared for 19 animals stranded on the plains for those days. They showed extraordinary hospitality on one of the hardest days of our history. 5 days later, the FAA opened the airspace. And during the flight back to Dallas, the passengers collected donations to send back to the people of the town to thank them. And every year since then, anyone who can make it goes back to Gander, Canada for a reunion and a celebration. The people in that town could have locked their doors and said, "We don't know what's happening in the world right now. We're just going to protect what we've got. Go somewhere else," but they didn't. Sarah and Abraham could have turned the visitors away that day. Said, "We don't believe anymore. We don't trust anymore." But they prepared a lavish feast for the visitors and showed them this extraordinary hospitality. And in doing so, they welcomed this new thing God was about to do in their lives and through them for the whole world. Everything had seemed impossible to Abraham and Sarah until it wasn't. Everything seemed to be over, except it wasn't. Impossible things happen with a God who keeps promises. God isn't likely to wave a magic wand. But what if God is calling the church for exactly such a time as this? What if the faith community, Christians and Jews and Muslims and Sikhs and Hindu and Buddhists, everybody could finally join efforts and take the lead? Say, something new has to happen and it has to start now and it has to start with us. What if we could take the lead in a moral and spiritual transformation? What if God is ready to give birth to something new and better in the midst of this crisis, and we are being invited to help midwife what happens next? Calling us to welcome an entirely different way of being in this world. Just as things begin to look and feel hopeless, God invites us into the hard and holy work of a different kind of hope. The warnings are dire. But what if instead of turning away from this crisis or becoming frozen with fear, we begin to imagine what the world might look like? If we all shared what we had. Because God keeps God's promises to love what God has created, to be with us always, to redeem and make all things new. So this week, your homework, remember? Find a moment and a place where you can stop and sit or stand. Be quiet for a moment, and then be deeply observant. The clothes you are wearing, where were they stitched? And how were they delivered to the store where you got them? The coffee you drank, where were the beans grown? The bread on your table, where did the wheat come from? Look at whatever is around you, whether it is the birds, the insects, the four walls of your house, your room. Whose hands had a part in bringing that? Think about how much of nature, how many people, your life intersects with each day. Write down as many of those connections as you can. Ask God to speak to you about those connections. Trust the promises of God to strengthen those connections. Come back next week when we think more together about what do we do now.